everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Cinema D'Amore. I'm one of your hosts, James Reinhart.
I'm another one, Justin Morgan.
Chuck Phillips.
You're just Chuck Phillips. You're not a host.
I'm not a host. I'm barely even a person.
Yeah, this early.
Or it's like a Groot thing where you just say like your own name.
Yeah.
What was your review on the movie, Chuck Phillips?
That's an interesting thought, Chuck. Chuck Phillips.
Wow. You loved it that much.
So I guess this is the unofficial kickoff of our new theme, Feel Good Christmas. For some reason, I thought last week's movie was, but I don't qualify last week's movie as a feel-good movie.
No, it isn't.
Yeah. But
you didn't feel good at the end?
Nah, not really.
Just felt gross at the end. You're just like, yeah, everybody still excited about that stupid toy.
Yeah. Yeah, I was trying to figure out a theme for this month, and at first I was gonna go with like a creepy Christmas, but I thought it was far too close to our unconventional Christmas theme that we did a couple years ago. And like, you know, I don't know, 2020 has been such like a dark year. I feel like ending it on an upbeat, positive note, at least podcast-wise, would be useful. So I decided to go discussing feel-good Christmas movies, and my pick was Klaus, a movie that came out last year. It's available on Netflix.
Yeah, it's funny because it has been such a fucking long, long year. Mm. But this is the second time I watched Klaus this year, because I watched it in January or February because it was nominated for an Academy Award. And our Oscars episode, we talk about it a little bit, although it's really kind of a soundbite at best. But yeah, it's actually a really good, it is Christmas. It has a really interesting animation style that I don't know what it's called. I didn't really research that, but the style itself that kind of reminds me of, like, it looks like an old, like a children's book or something. Like if they drew a kid's book.
Yeah. And from what I understand, animation-wise, their style it's 2D animation, but they used 3D lighting techniques on it, which kind of gives it that unique background. Because I didn't know it was 2D animation until after I watched it.
Yeah, I know. Like how you brought up about it being at the Academy Awards, and that's how it got mentioned. I think, James, you picked this to be the winner for Best Animation, I think.
I think I did, yeah.
And me and Justin were just like, James, it's a good movie, but Toy Story 4 was released the same year, and it was just like, I just knew in my heart it didn't have a chance.
Netflix had another really, really good one called I Lost My Body, which it sounds weird in the concept. It's about a guy that gets his hand gets severed, and his hand is trying to find him the entire movie. I like cried watching that movie. It's really good. But no, Klaus is good too. They were all pretty. It was a really good movie.
I haven't seen Toy Story 4 yet. So
I know. It's your, I don't know, hipster or something.
No, it's, you know, I'll see it eventually.
It is good. It's hard to be like, if number 4, really, it's that good. Yeah, it's still pretty good.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what they, yeah, I guess when you take, what, 25 plus years to make 4 movies, then they turn out a little bit better.
Yeah, and you got plenty of time to make sure that they come out good.
They've like secretly been animating it since like 1995.
They've already pre-recorded Tom Hanks and Tim Allen for future use once they die.
Yeah.
They'll never stop making them.
Yeah, everyone that has already passed away in the Toy Story realm is still, it's actually still their voice. They just are like, oh, it's weird how we keep finding people that are so similar sounding.
Yeah, weird. Looks nervous.
But Klaus is Jason Schwartzman, which I've been getting a lot of Jason Schwartzman the last couple weeks with Fargo. I have an episode to go because I'm behind.
Yeah, Jason Schwartzman and J.K. Simmons as the titular Klaus.
So for some reason, I didn't look this up nor think it was J.K. Simmons.
Yeah, it's him, and he also voices the drill sergeant at the beginning. So you got twice the J.K. Simmons in this movie.
Yeah, I mean, I think the most interesting thing too is this movie starts off with making the protagonist, I forget his name, Jason Schwartzman,
Jesper. Mm.
Jesper, thank you. He is really unlikable. He's a human being that you would loathe, which I guess it makes his character arc so much better. But it's probably only about 10 minutes into the movie before he's starting to be I don't know. He's still kind of a manipulator and a user.
Yeah. And I think there's so much about this movie that I think is universal and why it appeals to people, especially me. But, you know, Jesper does start out his journey, like you said, an extremely unlikable character. And it's one of those classic character arcs where, you know, he goes from doing something for selfish reasons into, turning around and doing it, you know, for the greater good and not for himself. The entire theme of this movie, which they repeat several times, is, you know, one true selfless act, you know, inspires another. And we kind of see that through his journey.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of like the way it all comes together. I don't know how much of it is based in history, since it seems to be more based in history. Obviously, it's still a little cartoony. But, it doesn't rely on magic. It relies on a pretty realistic world for the most part. There's a few things in it that are I don't know. Maybe setting up it ends in a way that's like magic could happen.
Yeah, I don't know if it's. I mean, it's weird because it clearly takes place in a fantasy world.
I'm pretty sure it takes place in the real world. Hmm.
Do you know of a place called Smearensburg, Justin?
Yeah. If there wasn't global warming, it would still be around.
Yeah, I don't think the post office has ever been how it's, you know, portrayed in this movie as this almost militarized, well-oiled machine. Like, the post office in this movie is definitely what you imagined the post office to be like when you're a kid.
Is the post office our running theme for December? Oh, I guess we technically, Jingle All the Way was in November.
Yeah, I thought about that. But also how sort of timely this movie is, where we're watching it in 2020, and it's a movie about how important the post office is.
That dawned on me, too. I was thinking the same thing. I was like, weird how it didn't seem that important. Mm-hmm. Now we know the Postmaster General's name.
Yeah.
I have a stamp hanging on my wall that I bought to help them stay open. Operating.
Well, it's like, I remember the Daily Show years ago. There was talk about, you know, the post office was in trouble and the Postmaster General was appearing before Congress. And Jon Stewart's like, yeah, the Postmaster General made an appearance before Congress. And it shows like a clip of a guy that looks like the Postmaster General in this movie, where he's like wearing a military suit and he's got like the mustache and the mutton chops and like the big pointy gold hat. And then it goes back to Jon Stewart and he's like, yeah, so I've been informed that's not the actual Postmaster General. Here's actual footage of the Postmaster General. And he shows a guy testifying before Congress. And he's like, you know, like a frumpy looking dude in a suit, kind of balding, overweight.
Looks like Bobby Monahan.
Yeah, John Stewart's like, so Postmaster General really looks like a guy that manages the staples, not what you always imagine them to look like.
I feel like you, when you were describing what they thought the Postmaster General to look like, it just made me think of John Oliver did a thing where he showed, like, if you worked at the, I think, New York Waste Management for so long, you got to dress up like a general and get your picture taken. Like a whole segment, he showed like a bunch of, like, big overweight guys just wearing like, they look like Captain Crunch uniforms. He's like, yeah, you just worked for Waste Management for like 30 years and you get a title of general.
Wow. Sick.
Yeah. So, but yeah, that's why I feel like this film, that's why I say like it, you know, definitely takes place in some sort of reality where the post office is almost like a military unit.
It's like 100 minutes long, and there's a lot packed into this movie.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
The education system, warring factions. Mm-hmm. It's got everything. Toy making.
Yeah, it's interesting as a Santa Claus origin movie, because for the first time I watched this, I watched it with Lexi. And she asked me to watch it with her. She said she had really liked it and wanted to watch it again. So obviously, you know, it's called Klaus. You're like, oh, okay, it's a Santa movie. But you spend like the first couple minutes of this movie being like, so where's Christmas at? And, you know, it's this selfish postman who's sent to this isolated town to establish a post office. And he finds out, you know, that the town is basically made up of two warring families. And it also has like an almost Lovecraftian like look to it. For the beginning, is this broken down fish town with fish bones everywhere? So yeah, you're just, at least me, I was like, okay, so
the intro is really funny. This movie has some really good moments in it of humor, and I think the funny part is when Jesper shows up to this island for the first time, and it's like kind of foggy, and it plays like a horror film. Mm-hmm. Where like the kids are just like, they're either like scurrying or just like staring at him. So it's just like nightmare. It feels like something from Silent Hill or something.
Yeah.
that's where they were like, what if he goes to Silent Hill? Wouldn't that be funny? They're like, it's not a family movie. It's like, it will only do it for 5 minutes.
There's always the women carrying something that looks like a body wrapped in a rug.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Throughout the film, you see that like multiple times.
Yeah, like I said, it's really funny. A really funny movie. I agree with James's initial judgment towards it. You're like, oh, like I don't think I would have, if it wasn't up for Academy Award, I don't think I would have turned it on. I would just kind of assumed it was another Christmas kids movie. And I mean, I guess it is, but it's definitely designed more for adults. And with all the Christmas movies that I watched over my lifetime, I felt that this one kind of felt fresh. I wasn't worried about the Christmas story ever, how it was going to come together. Most things that come together kind of come together in a way that you would imagine it would. So it's not always the most surprising, but I was more interested in the characters. Even Klaus, like, they play him like he's very mysterious. He just gets name dropped and they're like, what? There's a guy out there. And, they also play him off like a murderer. So, you know, if you're going to start a Christmas movie, make sure it looks like Santa might murder you.
Yeah. And I know I was reading about they've been trying to make this since like 2015 and they kept pitching it to different studios. It kept being rejected because they thought it was too risky until Netflix picked it up in 2017, which, you know, Netflix seems to be the kind of the place that it will kind of give filmmakers, you know, however much money they need to make it. And, you know, and like, I think that's why, you know, I like this is, you know, it definitely doesn't seem like a Christmas movie until towards the end. And even this, the story, the idea of a Santa Claus origin movie. I saw a joke online talking about, like screenwriters talk about, they have like a spec script bingo card. And one of the spaces on it is a Santa Claus origin movie. It just seems to be one of those things that people keep trying to retell the story. And, this definitely, you know, this definitely doesn't feel like a Santa Claus origin movie because of, you know, how they depict the character of Klaus who becomes Santa Claus. But, and not only that, you know, it's his origin, but it's told through the eyes of someone who ultimately becomes his friend. At first, it's, you know, Jesper, the main character, is just using Klaus. And then as the film goes, they become very good friends.
Right. Santa is a secondary character in this. But I feel like your bingo card idea, it's funny, but also when it comes to like, we need Christmas, we need Christmas, we need Christmas, like, what's a new Christmas idea? But like, Jesus Christ, I don't know. There's so many Christmas movies. How are we going to make it different? I guess there's not very many origin movies. Although I guess a lot of them kind of start as origin movies. Like the Santa Claus with Tim Allen is kind of an origin movie. He's learning to be Santa Claus for the first time after he murdered Santa Claus. So
yeah, it's like a running joke among screenwriters. Like anytime if they read a lot of spec scripts, I guess there are ideas that keep coming back up, and like they said, like female Robin Hood and Santa Claus origin movies are apparently like big things that keep coming up in spec scripts. And I know the Blacklist, they used to do a podcast where they do live table reads of the most popular scripts on their website. And one of them was like this very high fantasy Santa Claus origin movie, which is kind of like this, where you don't realize until the end that it's, well, I wouldn't say not like this, because you realize early on this is a Santa origin movie, whereas that script, I listened to it, it was a table read. You don't realize until the end that it's a Santa movie. So yeah, maybe it's just one of those things people have always kind of had it in their heads, like since they're a kid, as to, you know, how Santa Claus became Santa. And this, I just feel like, took a really unique approach to it, and it almost doesn't feel like a Christmas movie. And even, you know, they don't mention Christmas, I think, until the end, till like the third act, where they say like, oh, okay, we're going to do this on Christmas.
Yeah, like Christmas becomes the plot because they're like, we don't have enough toys to give every day. But I mean, overall, I think what's kind of interesting about it is it's not really, I mean, I want to say it's probably more authentic than most things that I watch. And by authentic, I mean, there's not a lot of bullshit of it. It really tries to ground it as much as possible. And it's, I don't know, it's almost like an atheist's Christmas or something. Religion is not in this movie. But I really do like the idea that they kind of build towards why, because I always thought about it growing up, where it's like December 25th is supposed to be the birthday of Jesus Christ. But I don't know, most Christians celebrate a guy in a red suit that drops off presents. It's like I don't know how that happened. And I guess this is probably the closest, because the little bit of history that I know, I'm sure a lot of this is fabricated, obviously. It kind of reminds me of like a late 90s Disney movie. But I don't really know how I'm. It kind of blows my expectations a little bit, because I guess they're kind of low to begin with, but it's really unfair to I guess have those expectations when you're going into this movie, because I actually think it's a wonderful movie, and I watched it twice, so it holds up. Although it was like a tag team of Academy Awards, and James is like, this is my pick. But I think it is a good pick. And like, I don't know, you're always rooting for something to happen throughout the whole movie. Like you're rooting for these warring factions to like become friends. You're rooting for them to like, you know, help that girl that he can't understand. And I want those kids to get educated. Like every, I don't know, every 10 minutes, like something really good's happening for this community.
Yeah. I think, one of my favorite things about it, kind of how you brought up how there's not necessarily magic. It doesn't present itself like that Klaus is some sort of like magical, powerful being. But the way they subtly weave in like all the what people consider like the mythology of Santa Claus, like how they have an ambush and it breaks their carriage, so it turns into a sleigh, and they like go flying off the cliff. So the kids like, the next morning's like, oh, he has a sleigh, and it's pulled by magic flying reindeer, and like then everyone starts telling everybody about that, and Klaus thinks that's hilarious. Or like that one, you know, Jesper's the one that's actually delivering the presents, not Klaus, because he's so huge. So he's going inside, and he gets that one the one kid that like bullied him on the first day he got there. So he puts coal instead in his stocking, and then he makes up the entire rule about, Klaus doesn't have to, I don't have to rat on you. He's got a list. It's the naughty list. And he's checking it. And only good kids are going to get presents from now on. Like, they just slowly, like, subtly add that stuff in every once in a while. Like, just, it doesn't, none of that, I didn't think, felt forced. Like, they were just trying to just, like, suddenly make him, you know, the typical, like, Americanized, what you would think of as Santa Claus. Or, like, how he gets a red suit from the people that help him at the end. Like, they all just kind of, like, subtly add those things in.
Yeah, and his, like, backstory of why he has the toys, because he's expecting kids, and it's really well thought out. I guess it seems like a movie that they were trying to make for a long time.
Yeah, that was like putting that was like moving the beginning of Up into the middle of the movie. It still like hits you like when he starts talking about his wife and it's flashing back, and you're just like, oh, this got real sad all of a sudden.
It's funny too, because it's like, what is the origin of Christmas? Selling stamps and spite, I guess. I don't know.
Selling stamps is good too. That's my other favorite segment of the film, when he like he becomes like a drug dealer, but with pen and paper for the kids. Like, walks down the alley and he's like, "Hey kid, you want a new toy?" And he's like, he's like secretly passing them like paper and pencils to write letters.
If this was an episode of Seinfeld, he'd end up in jail.
Yeah.
It reminded me of such like a Kramer thing. I don't know why it just takes me back to that time, but where it's just like the next scene's him like, "Hey kids, you want toys?" I'm like, "Oh my god."
I mean,
hopefully there's no police. He's gonna get arrested.
I mean, yeah, if I was an adult, you know, and some mailman was going up to my kid being like, "Hey, do you want a toy? Write this letter," I'd probably call the cops on him. But this is a kids' movie in a different time and place where. And like you said, it's a town where there doesn't seem to be any sort of law enforcement.
No, because it's almost, I hate saying believable since it is like very cartoonish, but it kind of makes sense that like there isn't any law, because it's just so far north that nobody cares what the hell happens there. Which seems to be like a common theme with like Westerns. They're like, no one cares about this fucking town. It's too far out there. Just let the outlaws have the town. I really like the design of the two families too, where it's like you got that like the fat, like redheaded family, and then like the real gaunt skeleton family.
Yeah.
And it is fun to kind of watch these characters like warm up, like the one gaunt guy that's like with the shotgun. You always see him with like the elephant gun.
He looked like Filch from Harry Potter. That's all I thought every time I saw him. Yeah. Cause just real skinny and long hair.
Yeah, he does, and his face does look like him too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that guy. Like, it's funny that I ended up liking that guy, and I never thought that he was gonna be something that you'd warm up to.
There's good moments when the families are coming together, like the kids like pick the other family's berries for that woman and like leave them on her porch. So like she feels like she's like, "Oh, they're trying to make me look bad. I have to one up them." So she brings over jam to the, to the other family. And then that woman comes back with like dessert. Like they're constantly like one upping each other to show like they're actually the better person.
And it's always like spiteful. Like they always look angry while doing it.
Yeah.
I do like when it's like their kids are playing together and they're like, disgusting.
Yeah, and they're
like, whoa, what's going on?
They have no idea why, like when the kids ask, "Why do we hate each other?" And they just like, they each have their own like separate throne hall rooms that are just like dedicated to the fact that they've apparently been fighting since the dawn of time. And they don't really seem to remember what the reason is. It's just that they've hated each other forever.
Yeah, it's kind of a thing that you've seen several times throughout. But I like that the town that, like, barely survived. They both kind of have their own like museums about why their people are the best. Which seems kind of realistic too. Like, there's a lot of realism to it for the way that it mocks it. I like the huge characters too. The one that's like a massive, I don't know if it's supposed to be like a child or whatever.
Oh yeah.
I think they both are. I think it's both supposed to be implied that they're just like big and kind of dumb.
I do like that scene that it reminds me of Batman Returns where like she like slowly backs up in the shadows. It reminds me of when Batman's winning and that lady like leaves Penguin, like the announcer lady.
Yeah, I didn't make that connection.
Usually when someone slowly walks back in the shadows, I'm like,
oh, Batman, you think Returns. Batman Returns.
I always do, because it's like, it's a really funny, it's like a subtle funny where like something bad's happening and they just kind of like slowly back away.
Yeah, I see it.
But, so is this something that you would put into your traditional yearly Christmas movie watching?
Yeah,
James.
And you know, when I first watched it last year with Lexi, you know, I wasn't prepared for how much I would enjoy this. You know, it really, really, you know, tugged on my heartstrings. Like, you know, got me really emotional. And we were both just like, yeah, we might have to watch that every year. And then rewatching it for this, you know, I wasn't sure if the film would have the same effect on me this, you know, a second time as it did the first time. And, you know, I was wrong. It really did just, I really was, did find myself, you know, as emotional watching this film for a second time as I did, you know, when I first watched it last year. You know, there's just, you know, something about it that, you know, just kind of hits you, at least hits me, you know, in the heartstrings. Like that scene where they give that little girl the wind sail. Or, you know, when they deliver the first present to the little boy and it's that wind up frog, just like, you know, how joyful these kids are when they find these things. Like it, yeah, it's something about it just kind of hit me on a really emotional level. And, yeah, it's definitely one of those things where I'm like, yeah, every year I feel like I'm gonna be watching this film for Christmas. Cause there is something universal in the story, I think, about, you know, joy and, you know, why we give, and it's almost sort of the opposite of the movie we watched last week where, you know, this last week, Jingle All the Way is just about, you know, getting his kid this toy and everyone obsessed over this toy, but all for the wrong reasons where, you know, this film is about, you know, we give people because, you know, we give to people because it feels good. And, you know, we want to, you know, we want to keep, you know, make each other feel good and being good to each other.
Well, Jingle All the Way is technically kind of like a one-off joke for parents.
Yeah.
And this definitely seems really well thought out. I do like how you were skeptical a second time, because I was too.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked it the first time, and then I kind of been like, I don't know, I guess that's kind of how I am with every movie. But I rewatched Hereditary and I was like kind of nervous I wasn't gonna like it as much. I don't know why, because I was like, I loved it right off the bat. But yeah, it's Klaus is pretty fucking impressive with how it wins you over. You got to give it like at least 10 minutes though. You got to get past that like really shitty Jesper Schwartzman dickhead.
Yeah, I don't even know about that, because like first time watching it, I was just kind of like, okay, this is not going the way, because like I said, you see a movie called Klaus, you're like, oh, okay, it's a Santa Claus movie, but introduces you to this postman who's like a dick and doesn't want to do his job. You know, he's like a spoiled rich brat whose dad pulled strings to get him to where he is, and you know, his dad's like, oh, I need you, I'm gonna teach you a lesson, I'm gonna send you to the middle of fucking nowhere.
Just like a rich dad, you know, yeah. Spoils them, makes them into an awful person, and then decides to teach them a lesson.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, this film, like, the dad definitely is not, you know, is blameless. His dad's like, oh, I don't know why you turned out to be such a piece of shit. And it's like, oh, look in the mirror, dad. But yeah, so to teach his kid a lesson, he sends him to this town and tells him he needs 6,000 letters in a year. So yeah, I was kind of intrigued right off the bat. I'm like, all right, this is not going the way I thought this movie would go. And you kind of spend the first half of the movie wondering, you know, where Santa's going to come in. And then, you know, Jesper finds out about this woodsman lives on the edge of town, and he goes to, you know, see if he has any mail, and ends up leaving that picture of that little kid drew that Jesper is trying to, you know, manipulate that kid into giving him money to mail him that picture back. And that sort of like, you know, sets everything in motion where Klaus wants to find that kid and give him a toy. And then Jesper comes with this whole idea of, you know, getting kids to write to Klaus and getting, giving them toys. It just like every turn it took surprised me because, you know, I was just like, okay, so what's going to happen next? Like, how is this going to tie into Santa? How is this going to tie into Christmas? So yeah, I was pretty much into it from the beginning.
I had to look it up again when I started watching this because I forgot that Jason Schwartzman was the voice. I did the same thing the first time I watched it. I heard the voice, and it made me immediately think of Kuzco from Emperor's New Groove. but I could tell it wasn't David Spade, but he's kind of like, I mean, he's basically the same character, like super rich and entitled. He's the same character. Yeah, and I had to look it up again because I'm like, oh, I know this voice, but I can't think of who it is. I was like, oh, Jason Schwartzman. Like every time,
maybe they were like, can you please be more like David Spade? And he's like, sure.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I watch this movie and you can pick up like a lot of moments that it feels like they were inspired from other movies. Like his character. Yeah. Like I said, makes me think of Kuzco every time I watch it. The end when he's like trying to save the sleigh makes me think of the Grinch. Like when he's trying to be like the strong and pull that sleigh up over the cliff or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like you could tell they were influenced by a lot of different things, but They put enough of their own spin on a lot of it that it doesn't feel like they're just trying to copy everything piece for piece for their own film.
There's just so much that's packed into this movie though. Like they use the runtime well. Like you're talking about like the spite too. Like there's only a couple people that hate Jesper and want him to leave, so they start mailing a bunch of letters back homes, like without him knowing. So, I don't know, maybe they didn't pay for it either. I wonder if they realized that. Hmm. But basically he accomplishes his goal, his like 6,000 letter goal, like way early, just because they're trying to get rid of him. So I guess his dad's like super impressed. But yeah, I mean, there's this like weird, yeah, I definitely feel the Grinch vibes where the sack was like so full of stuff that it was like, there's no way they're going to be able to stop this thing. But, yeah. It gets cartoony, like where they're like that big woman that has the little like it, basically she's snowboarding after them.
Yeah, oh, and they all grab the sleds, and then like that one tiny kid has like the smallest sled imaginable. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's like flipping it in the air doing tricks.
They're like, size is funny.
It's like a good, I love that whole, how that whole thing plays out when he goes back to save them, and yeah, you know, Klaus is, when they go to burn the toys, Klaus is like, oh, take the toys, but don't hurt anybody. And Jesper's like, no, I have to be the hero. I have to save everybody. And just, goes nuts and makes this whole giant chase scene. And then they show up and they're like, no, that was a fake bag of toys, Jesper. You overcomplicate things all the time. And you always try to be the hero. We already had a plan figured out. Like as soon as you left.
There was a weird joke too when he's like, it kind of had like Indiana Jones vibes where he's like, great job like driving through there to knock them off. How did you know it wasn't going to kill me too? And it just yeah. like smug, like I was trying to kill you. I don't give a fuck about you. I always love Santa Claus. It's like, I don't give a fuck about you.
Yeah, this is Klaus is definitely not the fat jolly Santa of yore. You know, he's an imposing figure for sure, but he spends most of the movie, you know, in some sort of almost depressed state.
He does have the hearty laugh.
He does, yeah.
Because they really have to point it out too.
Yeah,
they're like, why do you laugh like that?
They're like, oh, is that your laugh?
They're like, we have these 70 things that have to get into this movie, and they have to point them all out.
You know, it's like, I don't know, it's almost like the Batman Begins of Santa Claus movies, where they're like, okay, we got to explain why he does this, why he does that, you know, why...
That's a good comparison, too, because I think both movies do a good job of not over-explaining, because they trust the audience is a lot smarter, and you don't have to be familiar. I don't know who's not familiar with Batman and Santa Claus, but if you're not familiar with them, like, you don't, like... It gives you enough information that you know, you'll understand, and it just trusts its audience, which I think is the best thing about these types of movies.
Yeah. Yeah, and I feel like both were kind of approaching from a fresh perspective, too. You know, like, I feel like any other Santa Claus origin movie would have been extremely, like, high fantasy sort of thing, and this is, you know, like, it's clearly fantasy, but it's set in a very different sort of fantasy world. And telling a very different story.
When I think,
well, let's compare them. Let's compare them, James.
Batman
and Santa Claus. They both train like in the fucking like wintry mountains where it's super cold.
They mostly work at night.
Yeah, they mostly work at night. They're both rich, and then become like more like they care more about the community by the end.
They both have toys.
Yeah, they have vehicles, children's sidekicks.
Yeah.
They're both at their best when you can't see them or don't know they're there.
Yeah.
Yeah. The villains often take care of themselves. I always like a good superhero, movie where the villain takes care of themselves.
Just cleans everything up. The hero doesn't have to do anything.
Well, like more in the lines of like the superhero won't they don't kill or they won't hurt, so like the villain always ends up like hurting themselves somehow.
Yeah,
like my favorite that I think of Spider-Man where Willem Dafoe like stabs himself.
Yeah,
and he has that great like oh shit moment. But that's like every Sam Raimi movie is like Spider-Man doesn't kill them; they kill themselves.
Yeah, because Doc Ock does the same.
Yeah, they always have to kill themselves. That's the only way they can go out.
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting.
Go ahead.
It is interesting in this that, you know, neither Klaus nor Jasper really sets out to resolve this feud. They both seem sort of indifferent towards the family feud. It just kind of something that starts to resolve itself around them as they are accomplishing their goals.
I mean, you have reindeer origin too.
Yeah, you
like
do.
It just keeps seeping back into my head.
And it's also not only is this about the underfunded post office, but the underfunded teachers too, where she has to use her own personal savings to improve the schoolhouse and education in the town.
I like that she decided to be like a fisherman of sorts.
Yeah, she's like a fishmonger of some sort.
That's probably the grossest part of the whole movie. You get to watch her cut fish open.
Yeah.
It's where she keeps her savings in the fish mouth.
Yeah, and I really do like when the kids want to start learning how to write so they can write letters to Santa. And it's like slowly becomes a school. But I like kind of like that hybrid in between where she's teaching these kids and they're like, there's so many damn dead fish hanging all over the place that you can barely see children. Like, I think she has to push dead fish away to see that there are children sitting ready to be taught.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The little kid that apparently doesn't speak English, they play it differently in this film, but that's like another one that reminds me of like Miracle on 34th Street, like that it's supposed to be like universal. Santa doesn't like choose just like one group of kids or one place. And they even talk about how it's, you know, it starts out, it's not just a global thing. It just slowly expands. You know, they start in their village, then they move out to the kid out in the little further area and just keep moving like out more and more every year.
Also, who is the one guy that can get presents to every children around the world?
Well,
trick question. It's the post office. They can do it.
Yeah. This movie is post office propaganda.
You did make me think, Justin. Speaking of Christmas movies, somebody had a meme on Facebook I saw that was every Christmas movie you've ever seen, Santa never goes to the house right next door. He always comes straight up the chimney and then blasts off 12,000 miles to Paris or something like that.
Like, I saw that. Maybe you sent it to me. I laughed, but then I thought of the Santa Claus where he immediately went to the house.
I know. I think that's like the only one I could like really think of off the top of my head. I think that it does show him kind of just going like house to house, but like every other one is just like he's like, oh, I delivered one present, now off to Russia.
Yeah, it is. It's played for jokes in the Santa Claus, but yeah, I don't know, because when they do Santa Claus tracking every year, he's in random, like, he's clearly going to one area. It's not like he's speeding from one side of the world to the other.
Oh, yeah.
And then I'm like, yeah, those Dutch people became, like, I don't know what they were. Natives, at
least.
They
think they call them Semis?
Yeah, they became elves.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, yeah, that scene where he gives her the little girl that, you know, the elves, or when he gives her the windsail, though, that, like, I don't know. I choke up every time I watch it and I see that scene where they're just watching her, you know, play with this toy and just the pure joy on this child's face.
Santa loves her more than anyone else. It's because some people were getting like teddy bears. She got this kick-ass windsail thing that was like she could kill herself on, like Tony Hawk or something.
It's a good. I really enjoy the scene before that too. When it's after he's they run out of toys, I guess, because he's just had that warehouse full of toys for all the kids that he expected to have, and then he's slowly running out, and you know Jesper kind of does it out of, you know, more him wanting to reach his goal than actually caring about the kids, at least at first. And so he wants to you know, he tries to pitch him on the plan to build a workshop, and they're gonna be building toys forever or something like that. And then it's slowly, you know, he freaks out and tells him to leave. But that scene where he finally takes the kid to the teacher to have her translate, and then he knows Klaus isn't going to make any more toys. He tries to do it himself, but he just ends up with like a pile of scrap wood nailed together on his desk because he can't figure it out. And Klaus walks in and sees it, and that's what kind of like makes him decide, like, okay, maybe he is serious.
Yeah, it's a good moment where, you know, there's not really any dialogue. Like, this is kind of Klaus just goes to work with Jesper. You know, you don't really need that dialogue to, you know, communicate what they're both thinking and feeling in that moment. But yeah, then
yeah, that's the magic of this movie. It's subtle, not all the time, but where it needs to be.
Yeah, it really is one of those things where it shows, you know, how universal animation can be and how animation could, you know, not only tell a story, but sort of reach everyone, you know, on the same level.
Yeah. We're just like,
Yes. Wait for someone to respond.
No, you're right. It was a good moment. I just needed to let it sink in there.
Yeah. And yeah, that is kind of this whole movie is you just kind of have to let it sink in and enjoy these moments.
Yeah. Well, I definitely think that you picked a pretty good movie because you're pretty much a Grinch. No, you're not a Grinch. No, good. I want to hear how you are or aren't a Grinch.
I was saying this on Twitter, you know, because I don't really like Christmas. I'm like, but you say it and everyone assumes that you're on some sort of Grinch-esque crusade to destroy Christmas. And I don't want to take it away from anyone. There are aspects of the holiday I like. It's just, you know, there are others that I don't. Yeah, but, you know, I don't want to take Christmas away from anyone. If you enjoy it, then good for you.
I don't want to take anything away from anybody either.
Yeah.
But I do see things where some people, I'm like, calm down. They have like 3 Christmas trees.
Yeah.
I'm like, stop. Or they're supporting like all those Hallmark movies. Like, why?
Yeah.
Watch
somebody's,
a good one.
Somebody's got to keep Klaus. Them in business.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
There's a. I've been watching the H.G. Lewis films, and there's a director that has a few interviews talking about H.G. Lewis, and like talking about how they're. He's like, oh, he was my big inspiration for my career, and I had to look the guy up because I thought I recognized the name, but I don't think I did. And he made a bunch of weird, like kind of semi, I would say, bad movies. Like his early films are The Brain Leeches, Demented Death Farm Massacre, and The Phantom Empire. And then I was like, has that guy directed anything like more recently that I might know? His most recent films are A Royal Christmas Engagement, One Fine Christmas, Bacon Christmas, A Christmas Princess.
Are they all Hallmark?
I don't know. I don't even think these are Hallmark movies. These are sub Hallmark movies. These are the ones that go straight to DVD, like only at Walmart. Like. And I'm just looking at that guy and I'm like, this guy's like talking about like H.G. Lewis, like the godfather of gore, and being like, he was a real inspiration on my whole career. And I really owe a lot to him. And I'm like, and this is how you're using it to make like bad Christmas movies.
I mean, maybe it's because of how cheap they are, and they have to like they rework the same sets and actors.
I would almost guarantee like if you look at his filmography, he makes like 3 or 4 Christmas movies a year, and I'm like, oh, you know, he's just pumping those out like on the same place.
I think that
people make fun of him, but he's got that Hallmark money.
Yeah, he probably is pretty wealthy from it.
I think that is the thing for me is for Christmas movies. There is such a cynicism around Christmas, especially Christmas movies, where I feel like studios and filmmakers just feel like it's a easy, you know, we're going to churn out this movie that has the same plot as like 47 other movies. And, you know, that'll be that. Like, you know, I feel there are countless, you know, Christmas movies that come out every year that all feel the same or feel derivative. And then you get something like Klaus that comes along, or even like, you know, I'd say back in 2004, if Elf, you get these movies that come out that feel very heartfelt and made from a place of love and have this sort of optimistic, you know, sincere opinion. And those are the ones that always stick with me, that always feel like universal, that they have something fresh to say. And that's probably why I love this movie. And, you know, why, you know, I'm pretty hard on Christmas movies unless it is something that does feel like it has something, you know, new to say.
I'd like to know which ones you're hardest on, because like even the Grinch comment, I get it 100%. I'm definitely not one of those type of people either. That's like, if it makes you happy, it makes you happy. But the actual Grinch movie is kind of a feel good movie. It's literally about like warming up to, you know, others and not being selfish. Like it is a, like the moral of that movie is a good. I mean, I'm not. They all kind of end the same way. But I mean, the Jim Carrey one's a little strange. But what Christmas movies would you like despise? I guess in contrast,
I don't know. I'm trying to think of the ones that I've outright disliked. You know, I generally try to avoid most of them unless it's like something that's, you know, see, that's like a classic or comes highly recommended. Like I probably wouldn't have even watched this movie if Lexi wouldn't have asked me to watch it with her.
Did you see Last Christmas?
I don't think I did. Which one's that?
It's the movie that came out last year with Emilia Clarke.
No. I kind of wanted to, but no, I didn't see it.
Did you watch it, Chuck?
No.
I heard the ending.
It was on TV. Yeah, the ending is the funniest thing in the world. It's like, it is literally a joke that the screenwriter was never talked out of. It's so funny because I'm like, oh my god, like how did it, how, like the whole time, they made the whole movie and they never thought it was a bad idea. I won't spoil it because it's funny to have watched, have to watch. The movie is not terrible. It's decent. It just has like that. I think maybe it has more like the Hallmark vibe to it. But the ending is like, are you fucking kidding me? It's funny. It's not a downer. I don't know. How can it be a downer? You watch 40, 40 Hallmark Christmas movies every year. Enjoy that you got this one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, I don't like Christmas. Like, I don't know. Every Christmas, the big Christmas movies I generally like. I love Christmas Vacation. I love Home Alone. Yeah, I can't think of one. Like, there's Christmas Story is a little... Yeah, well, Christmas Story is a little harder for me to watch because I think it got, like, killed for me because I used to love that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, now it... But no, I think it's a good movie if you didn't have to fucking watch it, like, I don't know, 100 times before Christmas.
Yeah, that...
It's like the Mariah Carey Christmas song. It's like...
Yeah, I brought up two of that song. I said so, and I'm like, yeah, I used to like that song. And then it started to play thousands of times around Christmas. And yeah, even Christmas Story, like, I wasn't a fan of it, you know, but I didn't hate it. And but then, you know, they started playing it, you know, all day, 24 hours every Christmas. And now I'm like, I could go the rest of my life without ever hearing anything about Christmas Story again.
The funny thing with Mariah Carey's Christmas stuff is I can remember it was just last year, or I guess not this past year, but 2019. I was at the movie theater, the one down in Century 3, and I'm just sitting there. I'm at the Dollar Tree getting, like, candy to take into the movie theater. And as soon as I open the door, I can hear All I Want for Christmas. And this is, like, in the middle of July. And I just look over, and this guy's just sitting in his car, and he doesn't even look, like, particularly happy. He's just kind of sitting there, like, looking at his phone or something like that. And I'm just like, that guy's just jamming out to Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas in the middle of July. Like, that's just a completely normal thing. Like, I'm like, that's Christmas, like, some serious psychopath stuff.
I want to know what his story is.
He must take it real serious, like real serious Christmas in July thing.
There's this punk rock Christmas album. There's a couple of them now.
No, there's a ton of them.
A Santa Claus, and it's like... a bunch of artists, and there's a song that's I Saw Daddy Kissing Santa Claus by Standstill, and it's like maybe one of my favorite Christmas songs. Seek it out if you haven't heard it before, but it's just like, I don't know, the most enjoyable thing ever. But that's what I have to resort to listening to because I can't stand it. You know, at least I'm not working, at least I'm not hearing the Christmas music at work every single day of my life.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting every single day. My favorite. Yeah,
they're like, we can only afford four songs.
Yeah, just replay them. I told my favorite one to hear. Well, not my favorite because it's actually pretty terrible, but the one that makes me laugh every time I hear it is the song Santa Baby. Michael Bublé does a version that's called Santa Buddy. And I was like, it's bad. Like, it's so bad. And I talked to, like, one of my coworkers the one day. I, like, walked up to him, and I'm like, have you paid attention to some of these songs playing sometimes? And he's like, no. I'm like, Michael Bublé's got one called Santa Buddy. And he's like, what? And, like, we started, it played, and we were, like, listening to it. I'm like, don't worry. He wants to make sure you know that this is just, like, his heterosexual friend, his buddy. Definitely has nothing to do with Santa Baby, which is definitely about, like, Madonna wanting to totally get with Santa Claus, like, and have him be her sugar daddy. This is totally just his buddy that, like, occasionally brings him some stuff every once in a while. It's like, don't get the impression that Michael Bublé's gay. He definitely doesn't want you to think that. Like, but he went out of his way to record a love song to Santa Claus and just change baby to buddy.
Hey, I like a lot of songs where it's like they'll cover it and they don't change the lyrics, so it sounds like what it sounds like.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter who's singing it. The one I always hated was that Jingle Bells song that I think, is it Barbara Streisand? The one where they just try to sing it as fast as they can. And I'm like, who thought this was a good idea?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I know which one you're talking about. I think there is a version by Barbara Streisand on that one.
They're like, Jingle Bells, Jingle All the Way. I'm like, and it goes faster and faster. I'm like, all right.
I feel like it's her or Bette Midler or something like that. But yeah, I know what you're talking about.
They're the same person.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure. But, yeah, written in the Christmas spirit. Got the tree up on Black Friday. That's when I usually put it up. I hate putting the Christmas tree up. That's probably one of the few things that, like, I hate about Christmas. Because, like, I always got screamed at for, like, we had to put the tree up, and then we had to, like, everything that we did wasn't, like, good enough or, like, in a good enough spot. So, like, I really like the tree being up and decorated. I hate doing it.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we probably come with a similar background where that's why I hate decorating, because it was just always involved being screamed at, and, you know, nothing ever was good enough. Which definitely is a large reason for why I hate the holidays in general. But yeah, once it's in place, you know, it feels great.
Yeah, it's like, it's just like a stink. Like, I mean, maybe it'd be different if we had kids too.
Because
then you change it and make it like, you can make it like special, maybe. Or you spoil your fucking kid. Then you got to teach them a lesson when they're 18.
Yeah.
Or, like,
like in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Be like, I spoiled you your whole life, but now you're going to learn that, you know, you can't be spoiled all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's pretty much my background. It's like these weird things that, like, you know the cause of it. It's a weird psychological thing that it's just like it brings up bad memories, I guess. It's not necessarily the holiday. It's just like the things associated with the holiday.
Yeah, no, I absolutely get you.
But I think that's sort of why these movies work a lot of times for me, because they don't fucking remind me of things that I had to do that were happening to me during Christmas. Chuck's like, I had a pretty good Christmas.
Yeah, I didn't do the decorating. Like, I would pretty much just pull the boxes out, and my mom did all the decorating, so I did not get yelled at for putting decorations in the wrong place.
Yeah.
I actually have my own Christmas tree that I decorate every year. It's a tiny one.
I have a tiny tree that you just plug in and it's done. Like, it has shit already hung on it.
Oh, man.
It's usually my little basement tree.
I have to, like, I rotate my ornaments because I have, like, I have a box of, like, 50 ornaments in it, and I just, like, slowly rotate. Like, I got a lot of Star Wars ones to put up.
Nice.
Mine are, like, I picked up the habit of, like, Hallmark, I guess I support Hallmark, ornaments the last couple, like, maybe the last 6 or 7 years, where I was getting, like, I don't know, like 3 or 4 a year. And this year I got like 9 of them. So my Christmas tree looks like the least Christmas thing ever. Like, it's more of, it's just like, they might as well just be toys hanging off the tree. Because Steph had this like ribbon and bow that was at the top of the tree. And it's starting to get like, I don't say, it was getting used. So we're like, we'll put a topper on this year. And I'm like, can we get the Super Mario star? So we got that. So it's like, my tree is basically Nintendo, Star Wars, Pixar. And then, like, there's a few random ones, like the fucking Predators on my tree.
Nice.
There's nothing more Christmassy than fucking Predator.
Yeah, I have the Predator ornament too.
It's like the Queen from Aliens, Ripley. I do have Christmas Vacation stuff on there, but yeah, I saw one. I don't know if you got him this year, but I saw Aquaman. It was on Storm. That's the name of his seahorse, right?
I actually don't remember what his seahorse is named. I'm not like an encyclopedia.
I am shocked.
I feel like me and Justin do have the same thing. Like, anytime I see something that I know for a fact is like super obscure, especially like DC comic related, I'm like, James probably knows. I'll ask him next time he's on the episode.
James,
what do you actually know or not?
Something like, I don't know, they're worshiping some creature in a movie. I'm like, James knows this. It's got to be Lovecraft. Yeah, it's just a weird character that comes up. I'm sure James knows this.
Well, I don't know all.
You also have a better, like, I don't have a good memory at all, so I just assume that other people have great memories of things. Because when I was a kid, like, literally, I can't do it now, but, like, what there was, like, 62 Goosebump books,
yeah.
And you could give me, they numbered them, you could give me a number, and I could, like, tell you exactly what title it is.
Yeah, I used to be like
where
that.
Where that memory is went, I don't know.
That, or, like, I used to know, like, every background character in Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not as much these days.
Well, if you got games like Trivial Pursuit, you had to know it. Like,
yeah.
They were just making crap up, I'm pretty sure. They were. They're like, what about this character? We're like, I don't even know what character that was. They're like, he's the one that coughed in this one scene.
Yeah. Yeah.
He wasn't even in focus.
It is like, James, I know you had that post that was like, every time, you know, a new show or movie comes out for Star Wars and people are like, whatever, like, Glorp Jabroni's back. And it's like, who?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, hey, they did a name drop in the last, well, last week's Mandalorian that I knew.
Yeah.
And I was excited about.
Yeah, I geeked out at that name drop, too.
And I was talking to Nick about it a little bit, who's been on the podcast, just on Twitter. And it's funny because he likes him for, like, he was watching the animated shows, which I never watched, and they brought him back. But they brought him back, like, he's kind of the same character, but what I know him from, they made it non-canon because there was just too much backstory, mm-hmm. and they needed to start fresh. So it's like, I know what he was. I don't know who he is. And he's like, he's basically the same. I'm like, cool.
Yeah, I hear that too.
But even like I read things like Bounty Hunter Wars growing up, and that was like, hey, let's give Boba Fett a backstory and make you like him, and he survives the Sarlacc pit.
Yeah.
And like they tease him in the first season, and then he's there in the second season. But I'm like, if that's all he is, I'm very satisfied with that. Just let him be like a person that's there. That's all he's really ever been, a person that's there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be, I don't know. I'm sure they have a plan. So I'm not going to jump to conclusions like every Star Wars fanboy.
Oh, I wasn't jumping to conclude. Well, yeah, that's everything.
Yeah.
You're just going to be disappointed that way. Just go into it not knowing.
Yeah, it's just like there's so many like fan theories and stuff. And I'm just like, I'm just going to, you know, sit back and see what story they're going to tell.
Well, I think it applies to this, to all movies in general. I'm not very picky about things being the way, A, that I thought that they should go. Mm-hmm. I'm actually usually like it better when they don't go the way I thought they were going to go, but they seem to me to be a better way than I thought it could have went.
Yeah.
So it like defies my expectations, but like, I don't know, like Shining's a perfect example. I love the book. I love the movie. They're nothing alike. And I understand people not liking one or the other.
Yeah.
But, I can separate them. The only times like I ever get mad at like an adaptation, I understand characters will fall on the wayside. Is like if it just seemed lazy mm-hmm. or something, you know.
Yeah. So yeah, I guess final thoughts on Klaus. Absolute silence.
Chuck, are you still with us? Okay. Yeah. Why don't you have your thought?
I think final thought would be it's definitely worth watching. I really enjoy I think what sold me on it, or at least what made me most interested, was just when I saw pictures of like the animation style, because it's not specifically, doesn't remind me necessarily of anything in particular. It almost makes me, the way they animate and color and light things almost makes me think more of like a stop motion type film, except more smoothly animated. So it's definitely worth checking out if you're, I know there's always those people that are like, oh, every movie's just, every cartoon's just CGI and it's all computer animated these days. No one does anything 2D or interesting except for, you know, it's usually like foreign studios, which I know this was, a lot of people worked on this. I don't know the exact country they're from, but, a lot of those places are still love the old school 2D animations and doing things like that. So, mm-hmm. I think it
reminds me of the animation that's like in Krampus for like a minute.
Oh yeah, I see
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah. It's yeah. It gives it more, I guess, like a timeless feel. Like it doesn't feel dated to any one time in particular. Like in 10 years, you could still watch this movie, and it doesn't specifically look like it was made any particular time.
Yeah, my it's on Netflix. You probably have Netflix. Check it out. Yeah, I would put it in your rotation and give it a shot for sure, whether you have kids or not.
Yeah, I would say so too.
But yeah, highly enjoyable. I'd say, like I've said before, give it a couple minutes before you start warming up to the character. But yeah, it does kind of have that, like, starts off kind of cynical and then it just warms up throughout the entire movie. Mm-hmm. But yeah, James?
Yeah, I feel like, you know, even if you're extremely jaded towards Christmas, this film will appeal to you. I mean, I'm extremely jaded towards Christmas and I love this film. But yeah, it just tells a universal story. It's not cynical, and I don't think it's trying. It doesn't come off as trying too hard like a lot of Christmas films. It just comes off like it's trying to tell a good story and, you know, make you feel happy. And I think it succeeds. And, you know, like I said, I feel like this is could become a, this becomes a Christmas tradition now on for me is watching this film.
It's interesting too, because all the movies that follow, the next three movies, are all movies I watch every year for Christmas, like around Christmas time. Although, I'm watching them all out of order from what I normally do.
Well, there we go. We're shaking things up for you.
You shook them up.
I'm good leaving you shook.
Yeah. But, hey, we're Cinema D'Amore. We thank you guys for listening. We're all on Twitter, more so James, less so Chuck. I'm at JJMorgan19 on Twitter.
James Reinhardt.
ChuckFinn66.
We're at Cinema D'Amore on there, / Cinema D'Amore on Facebook. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, everything. Please, if you like it, what you hear, please subscribe and rate and review us. It really helps to get some sort of feedback. Even if you're our friend and you're just like, the best podcast I have ever heard. Which I'm like, I don't know about that, but thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, guys.
Thanks.